and welcome to Coffee and Catholics, a Catholic Women's Talk Show podcast. I'm Stacy, one of your hosts, and with me I have...
Hi, I'm Alicia.
I'm Annie.
And I'm Lauren.
Hello, and welcome to Coffee and Catholics. This week, we decided that we would kind of continue the talk about feminine genius, because Lauren and Alicia weren't able to join us last time when Annie and I talked with Father Chris. Also, Father Chris talked about the four pillars of St. John Paul II's feminine genius, which were receptivity,
maternity, sensitivity, and generosity.
And we really only got around to receptivity and the complementarianism of the sexes. So we thought we can kind of continue that talk, but also reach out a little bit further into what feminine genius is to us, and then also have Lauren and Alicia weigh in. What was funny, right after we recorded that with Father Chris, literally the next day on my Hallow app, I got a notification for Lisa Cotter's feminine genius workshop, or you know, like kind of a little retreat.
They're listening.
And so I still haven't finished it fully, but I've really enjoyed, like, there were some things that came up that I really loved about it. But in her workshop on Hallow, she does talk about how Pope St. John Paul II wasn't the first one to coin the feminine genius, even though we talk a lot about him using that term, especially from his letter to women. The idea of the feminine genius, or the genius of femininity, is even written back all the way into there. She mentions a book from 1934 by Catholic writer Gertrude von Lefort. And
the poetry is divine.
It's originally written in German, but Lisa Cotter mentions that it was finally translated in 1954 to English and is still available today. So the book is called The Eternal Woman, if you're interested in reading that. But so this idea of the feminine genius was, you know, already being put out there in 1934. And she says that even the origin is even unknown. That's just the first written accounts. Like, it had already been talked about in circles and in philosophy. And we even see it from St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, one of my favorites, also known as St. Edith Stein. She was a philosopher, a Jewish philosopher who turned to a Carmelite nun. But she talks about the feminine genius. And just a couple days ago, I got the book Unlocking the Feminine Genius with Edith Stein, which is so, and I've started to go through it, but I haven't gotten to read a whole bunch. But I just think it's important for us to know that this whole idea of these gifts of women was not just all of a sudden thought of by St. Pope John Paul II. I think that it's important to know that he had these women, and one of them a saint that he canonized, mm-hmm. That he had their works that he was being inspired by. And so this is not a man, you know, like I think Father Brashears talks about, how is a man mansplaining of being a woman to me?
Explained it to him, and like, he was like, this is the truth.
Yes. And Father said that he looked to Mary, but he also looked to Saint Edith Stein, and he looked to Gertrude von Lefort. And so, so he had these women that he built, like he was building this idea off the shoulders of great women.
Great women thinkers, yes.
Yeah, I thought the conversation that you guys had was really interesting, because I've heard, I think Annie, you were maybe the first one to really start talking about the feminine genius and stuff, and I thought it just sounded so corny, like the term itself. Now I've like learned more about it, and I'm like, oh, okay, I actually like this. But I thought that was really interesting, when he was talking about like receptivity of women, and how we're kind of different from men, that we like that nurturing role that we have or whatever, to be able to empathize. I think, and he talked about how both men and women, there's that crossover, whatever. You can't say that only women are receptive and empathetic and, can take care of the boo-boos of the kids or, listen closely to a friend who's, having a difficult time, obviously. But, women kind of have a special proclivity to that compared to men.
And it's universal. Across cultures, you see this, and I think that lends credibility to the Holy Father's assertion of this and to the women he was formed by, that this is, this idea of feminine genius is something that you can see in every culture.
Mm-hmm. Lisa Cotter also mentions about how, because we talked a lot about how men can also be receptive and stuff, but she says she likes to give the example of what if you and your husband are in bed and your kids are in the other room and somebody breaks into your house. Your husband is probably going to go confront the predator that is in your house, the prowler, while you are going to go to your children. Mm-hmm. Both of you are taking on the protector mode. Mm-hmm. So both of you are exhibiting that gift of protector, but you're exhibiting them in different mm-hmm. ways. And they're working together, because while one is trying to get the children out and safe, the other is keeping the whole family safe by going
destroying
after
the threat.
But destroying mm-hmm. the threat. So these gifts aren't exclusive to women, but they are exhibited more.
And so
the protector role, we usually say is a masculine genius, I guess. And so, but we can still have these gifts, but we present them differently, and that's how they.
I think it's important to know that all these different examples we give, and that Father Chris gives, if it's opposite in your home, that doesn't make you less feminine mm-hmm. or your husband
right.
less masculine or anything. There's a lot of crossover.
Yes.
We're just talking about there are stereotypes, I guess you would say. There are general things that you say just because there is an element of truth in there, and so we have to make some blanket statements there, but that doesn't mean that every situation is exactly like that. It's just that overall it tends to be the woman will go to her children and the man would go to confront, and that's how that protector role would be displayed in a lot of situations. But that doesn't mean that there's anything less if it's not like that.
Right.
Well, and also within that insular structure, that God-given protective structure of a home and a family where a man and a woman are operating together in partnership, that is a little Eden, essentially. And that is where our natures thrive in this environment of the home. This is what a family is supposed to be. It's supposed to image God in that continual that continual conversation between the Trinity. And so our natures are going to function at their very best when you have children, when there are two people there to kind of balance those roles out. Single mothers obviously are going to have to function at a different way because the structure within their home is different. So it's just, there's lots of different ways. We don't want to parse all that out. What we want to talk about really is the very, who we are as women at our core and what giftings we have when we feel safe. Not so much what happens to them when we don't feel safe, because that's a whole other podcast episode.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I love that, just commenting on you saying that our homes, their families are little Edens,
mm-hmm.
and that's where we thrive. I absolutely love that you said that. I thought that was beautiful.
When it's safe and beautiful, our natures are able to come out and play.
Mm-hmm.
When we feel protected, when we feel honored, we are able to be receptive and sensitive, and we're able to allow that part of us to have free reign. When we are not safe, is my larger point.
Yeah.
Maybe some of that pushes back a little bit and has to be held back for different reasons. And but it doesn't mean you don't have those giftings. It just means they'll display themselves in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I found the study that I was looking for. So when Father was talking about receptivity, and he's talking about our culture is trying to make women more like men.
Mm-hmm.
In that they're trying to encourage women to place work far above the family life and relationships in general and all of that. I actually found a study back in 2010 by Ruth Feldman, And in that study, she had 112 mothers and fathers, and they had these mothers and fathers interact with their children and then check their oxytocin levels. And oxytocin is the hormone within our bodies that is known for, or at least one of the main hormones in our bodies that is known for connections and like making relationships. And they found that across the board, mothers went up to their children in a nurturing role, and they held them, they hugged them, they took care of them, saying whatever that was, their oxytocin levels increased. And when fathers engaged with their children in play and like rough and tumble type of play, their oxytocin levels increased. And not only that, but children tend to mimic their parents in this, and that when they play with their fathers, their oxytocin levels increase. When they get nurtured by their mother specifically, their oxytocin levels increase. And so that's why, you know, you hear people talk about how, like, you know, the dad is the fun parent. Well, it's because children actually have a chemical proclivity to go, and the father as well, to playing with one
to
another.
To play. And to be silly.
And when they get hurt and they have a boo-boo, they tend to run to their mothers. Of course, it doesn't mean it's always the case.
Yeah,
but there's a tendency to do that because there's actually that chemical response within us. And so I find that really interesting that, you know, like, I don't by any means, I want to preface this, because I don't think it's bad for women to go to work. I don't think if you want to go to work, I know women who they were about to just pull their hair out because they could not handle being a stay-at-home mom, and they had to go to work, or they, like, bad things were going to happen. And that's fine. Like, they needed to do that for their mental health. Their family's going to be better off for that. I'm totally fine with that. But for our society to push women out of the home and say, you know, 80-hour work weeks, especially that kind of thing, like, be that girl boss or whatever, and shoot for that CEO role, push off family until you're 50s or whatever, or never, or, you know, even if you're not, you know, thinking about having children or whatever, but pushing off personal relationships and stuff, like, it goes against our very nature, because we are nurturers at our core. Like, that is when our oxytocin levels go up. It doesn't do that for men. It does it specifically for women. And so
we're made for relationships.
We're made for relationships. We're not made for 80-hour work weeks. You know, God made us to, and that's why I say that there's like a crossover between, like, even if you're not a mother, if you're a single woman, if you're never gonna have a family, or you just don't have one right now, or whatever, like, having a relationship with your family, with your friends, with your coworkers,
maintaining really, yeah,
community,
yeah, maintaining community and relationship is exhausting. I mean, it can be, like, just as much as going to work, and I've been both places, and so they could be, you know, it's beautiful as can going to work be beautiful, but it is a lot of work. And I think that's another thing that I really like that Father Chris kind of pointed out, that home life is work too. I think that he was kind of, I liked how he was pointing that out, because I don't like it when we go to these things and women who work outside the home are pushed off to the side. And then I go to these other things, and women who do work in the home are pushed to the side. Mm-hmm. Like, that both have value. But that's not even what we're talking about here. We're talking about, like, the fact that we are made for relationship in whatever capacity our vocations and our lives take us into. We are built to create relationships and
to nurture them, to use our sensitivity to build community and build friendships and connections.
And that's essentially what the feminine genius is that it's our, like you're saying, that what we do well as women is create community and relationships. Now, that doesn't mean, like, Lauren and I were just having this conversation down earlier about, you know, I had somebody come up to me and they're like, "Hey, what a cute outfit you have on." And we're both like extrovert and we're both introverts. But
so we were, you know, she's coming up with all this energy and she's coming right at us, right? And her eyes are all big and we're looking at it. We're like, what's going to happen? Both of us are stupid because we don't know.
You're like scared little mice.
But then I was like, But in a room of introverts, I can be that mm-hmm. extrovert, like the extroverted, like joyous, like, hey, how you guys doing? Okay, I'm going to raise my hand because I love you all. Are. And I'm, you know, I could be that person with a, in the room of other introverts. So just because we're built for relationship doesn't mean that it's easy.
Or that we should go build relationships with every single other woman we meet.
Right.
Don't do that. Choose your friends wisely.
We all have our charisms, and our feminine genius will work within our charisms.
Absolutely.
Another thing that Father had talked about that I found interesting, he talked about how, when he was talking about receptivity and the roles of men and women in our society and how our society wants to make, just kind of take away that femininity of women or whatever and make women more masculine and make them do the manly things or whatever when we're not, you know, we're not the same as men and that's okay. He talked about, you know, the role of men. And I think he said something along the lines that that men's work is the least valuable work in our society.
Mm-hmm.
I would tend to disagree with him. The reason why I would say that I disagree that men's work is the least valuable work is because I think that they are the ones, I think the men are the ones who are sacrificing their time away from their family. But they're doing so because, in order to provide for their family.
Yeah, money's not important, quote unquote, but it is. Because you have to feed your family. And so it has to happen. There has to be that sacrifice made. And I think that...
Which is why I think he called it the necessary evil.
Yeah.
Right. That,
yeah.
But I kind of see what you're saying too, Alicia, because work is not a necessary evil. Work is good. Work is dignified. Work
right.
is beautiful. I think what you're disagreeing with is a sub-point of an argument he made to support a bigger argument, which you both agree on. Does that make sense? Do you know what I mean? So, like, he's setting up an argument, and he says, and you're like, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. But then he goes, and you're like, I don't like the way you said that. It doesn't feel right because it feels like you're saying the work is not valuable in and of itself or dignified, which
well,
it is.
Well, and I think that was like, it was two things. It was that he said point blank that men's work is the least valuable work. And then he said, because you're working for money and money doesn't matter. So it's basically saying that men working out, work going to work is just worthless, basically, is what I got from it.
Quoting John Paul II himself. When he says that, Christopher Bashir's is actually paraphrasing something that JP2 actually said. He said that is the least valuable work.
Mm-hmm. Out of all the things.
Yeah.
When we look at the grand scheme of all of it.
And I guess that's maybe...
No, it's not saying it's not valuable.
Yeah.
He's saying of these things, it
would
be less
valuable.
Well, that
the money is the least valuable or whatever, but I think the sacrifice that is made
mm-hmm.
is incredibly valuable.
Yes.
However...
Oh, yeah.
But what we wanted to kind of point out is that there were some of us that kind of were like, what? And so if any of the four of us were questioning that comment, then we know that we probably have listeners that also question that comment. It does work. But the point that was trying to be made was that men's work and women's work are complementary, because if women are building up society and men's work is protecting society and helping and protecting their family and supporting their family, I think the point that was being made was that that can't be possible without those relationships that women are building in community and in our society. So men wouldn't have anything to support and protect. That's the point that was being made, not that their work was any less than, that it works with women's work, and women's work is that valuable.
Right. So John Paul II was specifically talking to women in this
mm-hmm.
case
and
all these. And so
drawing a comparison to create a contrast so that
right.
they can understand more deeply.
Right.
It's important to take those words in context.
Yeah. And men's, like, the work of being taken away from your home to provide for your family, the sacrificial love, but he does that because he loves us. And I think we just wanted to kind of acknowledge that.
We love our men.
Yeah.
We're grateful for their sacrifices. And also for our own, those of us that have our own work as well, our own work that we do on the side of being a mother too, mothers who work, we acknowledge that, the sacrifice and the dignity.
Which is part of society, like how our world works. We have to have a way to feed our family, and that requires money.
Well, I think even like this, like what? When that part was spoken in the last episode, that perked up ears, I think that also speaks to our feminine genius about that.
Yeah.
That receptivity to our husbands mm-hmm. and to the men who sensitivity and our appreciation towards them mm-hmm. for what they do for, you know, here we are working really hard to create these little human beings to get to heaven. And our husbands are making that so that we can do that. Or even we are working those times and trying to get that. So that work is valuable and beautiful and all that shapes and forms. So,
something we didn't touch on when we talked with Father Chris, that Stacey was pointing out, we kind of focused on receptivity and I think generosity a bit in there, but the pillar of maternity and how that can get played out in so many different roles.
Mm-hmm.
I love how Pope John Paul II really dove into that with how do you pronounce it? Moliere's
Dignitarum. Moliere's Dignitarum.
Yeah, that. I'm so bad at pronouncing it.
Well, these are hard words. Speak English!
Speak
Latin. We're Catholics. You speak Latin. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Amy.
and that maternity, yes, it can mean, yes, you know, our bodies are created to bear life. You know, that's a big difference between us and men. But that's not the only way that our maternity is. Mm-hmm. And that's not the calling for many women. I mean, like you look at religious women who are mm-hmm. called to the single life, that doesn't mean that they're not called to maternity.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that mothering and protecting
mm-hmm.
of others. I look at Mother Teresa and how, like, her maternity just, you know, that in comforting the dying, the poor and dying in those last days.
Like, if you think about it, too, our bodies are metaphors for our souls. I say that all the time. But when you look at the physical world, you think, this is real. Like, this table is real, and my body is real, and the material, it's less real than the immaterial, and that's not the truth. Our souls and our bodies are the same shape in a weird sort of mystical way. So like, you know, what you were saying about, you know, Edith Stein even said that a woman's soul is designed to be a place where other people can unfold and become who they are. That is what women do. We help people become who they are. When we are, you know, able to do that, and when we feel safe and are able to minister, our souls have a fecundity. Our souls have a fertility. We reproduce God in other people by our own love for God. That's an incredible gift. I'm not saying that men can't do that either, and have and will, and since the dawn of Christianity, we have. But in a special way, a woman is able to do that with her special receptivity and sensitivity.
Well, and you were talking about how, you know, maternity doesn't come only in, like, literal parenthood, regardless of whether or not that's, you know, biological or adoption. But I remember listening to a conversion story of a sister, and I don't remember anything about it except for this part. She said that she wanted to be a mom from the time that, from, like, back as far as she could remember, she wanted to be a mom. So when she started feeling this call to the religious life, she was very disturbed by this because mm-hmm. it meant giving up everything that she had ever wanted. And it broke her heart, and she ran from it for a long time. And finally, through just a series of events and, you know, experiences in her life, she came to the realization that by becoming a mother, she wasn't giving up motherhood, that she was actually becoming a mother to all of these people that she encountered
mm-hmm.
because that is her nature. And yes. So for women who, you know, like, for women who, you know, don't have, you know, that kind of motherly instinct or whatever, you don't really care for babies, you don't really care for children or whatever, like,
or like even home then, stuff.
Yeah, or like home stuff or whatnot, like, you don't present yourself in a very, like, feminine way or whatever, because that's just not where your affinities and your desires lie. like, you're still called to maternity.
You're still called to the spiritual maternity, yeah. How many of us have been mothered by another woman?
Yes.
Every single person in this room has been spiritually mothered by another woman. I can name a bunch right now who are probably listening to this, actually, some of you who have been spiritual mothers to me. It's what we do. We mother.
I've told my husband this. I haven't really shared it with a whole lot of people, but when I was, he was my last baby, when I was giving birth, and I had my doula there, and like, I was just exhausted. I'm just like resting my head, like on her bosom. And I was like, when I think of resting in God, that's what I think of. It was just like, it seems kind of a weird thing. I was like, I'm resting on my friend's boobs. But, you know, but it was just like, I was so exhausted. And so, like, at this point, she was just so comforting. And, like, that was to me, like, it really, whenever I think about what I'm trying to, like, visualize and, like, really imagine just, like, resting in God, that is what is brought to mind. And it's that that maternity aspect of God. And that's what we are given as women.
Everyone has a mother, a physical mother. This is a metaphor for the spiritual life. I mean, we all came into this place through our mother. She's a part of us. Whether she's alive or dead, she lives in us. You know, motherhood is eternal. This is why Pope John Paul II was so enamored of women and studied women so deeply, because he understood Our Lady representing herself in every one of us, for every one of us, for the rest of time until he comes for us. That's who we are.
Well, and part of, you know, being a mother is also leading souls to heaven, whether they're your physical children or if you're a contemplative and you're praying for the souls to get to heaven and continuously praying for us. If you don't know, there are women who are continuously praying that we make it to heaven. That's what they have devoted their life to. And I think that's just so beautiful. Like, they don't know your name. They don't know what troubles you're having, but they're praying for you. They're praying that God gives you what you need, or you the grace that you need to get to heaven and be with him.
There's an actual order of nuns in Washington who gets up during the witching hour at 2 a.m. every day to pray for mothers that are awake at that time and to intercede to God for them, asking them for the grace for them. Now, all of us are getting teary-eyed because we have all been that mom that was up and like, you have abandoned me. You have abandoned me. There is no one to help. No one cares. That hour of motherhood is a very careful place, because there's a lot that can happen in our minds and in our sense of isolation in our home and in our families and in this world in those hours of holding a crying baby who will not settle when everyone else in the house is asleep. And that is why these women get up and pray with us when that is happening, because the enemy wants to isolate. In the same way that God gives us these gifts, the enemy wants to isolate us by them. He wants to isolate us away from these giftings, and he wants to use them to make us feel isolated. So when a mother is waking up in the middle of the night, doing the most godlike things she can do, feeding another human with her breasts or a bottle or whatever, giving life to that is when the enemy will come in and try to create a sense of isolation in her. And that's why these ladies get up and they pray for these mamas. You can look them up. I think they're in Washington or something.
That's really cool. I'm
going to find the link. Yeah, I'll try to look for it too. It's really cool. I read about it the other day and it made me cry. Yeah. So
I'm up in the middle of the night tonight, just so frustrated.
They are praying.
They are. Think about them. Yes. And I want to thank God for them.
I mean, they are praying for you. Awesome. And you can send your name, too, by the way, to them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And this is how they act out their maternities.
Yes. Yeah.
They're by partnering together with us, getting us to heaven. We are going to get to heaven because the prayers of these women in these cloistered, you know, and in our prayers, too. You know, you don't have to be a cloistered nun to be a contemplative. You know, we can get each other to heaven. That's the big secret that we all are, like, trying to, like, pretend isn't a real thing. Like, yes, you can get other people to heaven with your prayers. Yes, you absolutely can.
mean, that's why I think God called us to pray. It's not just this empty thing that we're doing just because he told us to do it. There's meaning in it. We get to be, he is calling us to be a part of a miracle in somebody's life. Like, yes, God is working in them. I'm not doing it to them. But through my prayers,
yes,
God is allowing me to be a part of their conversion, of their deepening of faith and all of that. And it's absolutely a beautiful thing.
If you are a baptized believer and you are suffering, all suffering is salvific. Your suffering is accomplishing something because you are united with the cross of Christ as a baptized Christian. Suffering is salvific. Mm-hmm.
Well,
and we just remind ourselves of that.
That can be so hard to hear, though, in a moment of suffering. I know we're getting a little off
track. Oh, no. Here, yeah, no.
But it can be, yeah, but I agree with you that you can, and it's not only, salvific for somebody else. Like, there's a big people, I just want to make this point real quick. I've heard people say, you know, well, I'm suffering because, you know, Johnny Smith over here or whatever can get something, but I'm just kind of left in the dust and just dealing with this. No, God has a purpose for you. You're not an extra in your own life or whatever. God is working
for
you in
too.
That moment for you.
Yeah.
But so I think that's beautiful. So what about sensitivity then? Because we talked about receptivity, a bit of generosity, and now paternity. Because I haven't read the feminine, like Pope John Paul's the Second's writing, because I did not prepare for this well. But
well, it's like you haven't had a lot to do.
No,
you know, having a baby.
Slacker.
So, because it seems to me that sensitivity would be pretty close to receptivity.
Well, he actually says that mm-hmm. their two are very, very closely linked.
Mm-hmm.
I think of all of these, this is a personal story for me. I think of all of these feminine giftings, I feel like this is the one that the enemy tries to tear down and attack the most in my life. Mm-hmm. This ability to identify deeply with other people, to pick up on things that other people wouldn't pick up on,
mm-hmm.
like women's intuition, almost a knowing of things that maybe other people wouldn't know because that's just what our role is in the world. I feel like this ability to feel deeply and to experience the pain of others and to not want to cause pain to others is the one that the enemy exploits the most in my life, because he uses it to, or not just him, but just life in general, to be manipulated by people that you love. That can happen to me. To be tempted to give in to your kids because you understand they're feeling so deeply that you just kind of cave in, even though you know you probably shouldn't on this issue, because you identify so deeply with their reality or their feelings. To not ask for the things that you know you should ask for because you don't want to hurt someone's feelings or you don't want to make them upset. To demand the kind of treatment that you know you deserve because you don't want to make someone upset or rock the boat. This sensitivity to others, I feel like that's where I am. I feel at least at home in my feminine genius because I want to, I feel that there's such vulnerability in being sensitive. You have to risk.
So Elisa Cotter also had that, and she's like, I'm not a crier and I don't know how I must fail at being a feminine, my feminine genius, because I am not sensitive. And she went into a whole thing. I'm just going to read a part of it. And I hope I don't get in trouble with Hollow or something, but I'm quoting it to you guys. Go do this thing. You see for Pope St. John Paul II, the display of feminine sensitivity in that moment is not the crying. The crying is linked to sensitivity because it's a result of sensitivity, but it is not sensitivity itself. The display of sensitivity is that moment is the thinking, like not thinking, but thanking, like thank you. It's recognizing the need to show gratitude to all those who put their time, resources, hearts into, she's talking about an event in this case. But then for John Paul II, feminine genius sensitivity lies in a woman's ability to see and understand the needs of others. From practical surface needs, such as hand lotion and Tylenol, to deeper interior needs, such as the need to acknowledge and appreciate an appreciation for all that a person does to help make something possible. So receptivity is more the nurturing, while sensitivity is acknowledging that people have feelings. Like, so if that makes, I know those are very linked, but like, it's like the, thank you for being here today. That was a lot of hard work. Sometimes people don't say that to us.
Almost. Oh, yeah. Never. All of it.
And I think we were actually talking a little bit about this before we started recording, before at all tonight, because I think maybe it was Annie was talking about how she was like frustrated with her children. And Lauren had mentioned that that's because your feminine genius wasn't being recognized and appreciated. And so, because we were talking about it, she was like, oh, I don't think I could. Okay.
I wasn't being very receptive. Episode, and I was like, and then I'm like, and I went like crazy on my kids.
Well, she said, I was neither sensitive nor generous. Yeah. And she ticks off all these ways that she was being an anti-feminine geniusist. And I just simply said, that's not true. Because the reason why you went off on your kids was because those very things in your nature were being frustrated and being unable to express themselves the way they needed to. And I feel like that is really how, where a lot of triggers come from, certainly for me, you know, if I'm not being appreciated, it's a huge trigger for me.
I thought that this was beautiful from St. Pope John Paul II, the Mulieris Dignitatum. Anyways, I just wanted to read directly from
it. It's in the notes.
One of his paragraphs about how sensitivity plays a role. And it's on that topic that we were mentioning a little bit earlier, which is that suffering, right? We didn't mention that in this episode. As we contemplate this mother whose heart a sword has pierced, our thoughts go to all the suffering women in the world, suffering either physically or morally. In this suffering, a woman's sensitivity plays a role. Even though she often succeeds in resisting suffering better than a man, it is difficult to enumerate these sufferings. It is difficult to call them all by name. We may recall her maternal care for her children, especially when they fall sick or fall into bad ways, the death of those most dear to her, the loneliness of mothers forgotten by their grown-up children, the loneliness of widows, the sufferings of women who struggle alone to make a living, and women who have been wronged or exploited. Then there are the sufferings of consciences as a result of sin, which has wounded the woman's human or maternal dignity, the wounds of consciences which do not heal easily. With these sufferings, too, we must place ourselves at the foot of the cross. I just love that connection with how we suffer in these very specific ways in different walks of life as women or as humans, you know, in how that relate, like that is our sensitivity in practice, like that's it showing itself. And it's not always like, oh, I'm sensitive to how somebody else is feeling. Mm-hmm. It's sensitive to our own feelings, mm-hmm. and our own, and how we can take that suffering that we have and put it at the foot of the cross.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say, like, you were talking about how you struggle with the sensitivity, and I think I struggle with that as well. This is something that God has actually, like, worked within my life, mm-hmm. because I've always been a very self-centered person, like, just by the nature of me. As long as I can remember, I am a very, very self-centered person. I think about me. The idea of considering somebody else's, what they're going through, and thinking, like, oh, maybe I can do something about that. Maybe I can help them. I can offer a word of encouragement or ask them if they need help or, you know, whatever. Like, it doesn't naturally cross my mind. And so that's something that God has been working in my life, that like I've started to do that, and not by my own self. It's all by the grace of God, because left to my own devices, like, you all are just, you know, sorry about you, but I'm going to go and do my own thing. So, but yeah, so I think that, so as we're talking about this, I think about so many conversations that I've had with people, and like women who have said that, you know, well, I don't fall into that feminine role. I don't fall into that, you know, that feminine genius that we're talking about. And therefore, is there something wrong with me? Or in today's day and age, you know, going even further into like the transgender stuff, like, you know, does that make me less of a woman? And it's no, like, we all struggle. None of us are perfect. And I think that, you know, some things come naturally to us, some things don't, and that's okay. God's going to work with you where you're at, just like he's worked with me.
Well, and I think, again, we've been talking a lot about words, and sometimes we put very specific meanings to words when they can have broader meanings. I mean, look at our saints. I mean, if you really want to talk about, like, well, am I feminine enough? Look at the women saints we have in our lives. We have everybody from St. Joan of Arc to St. Thérèse of Lisieux to St. Catherine of Siena telling popes, get your rear back to Rome. I mean, they were not docile. Some of them were doing their saintly thing in little ways, and some of them were doing their saintly thing in big ways. And, like, these gifts don't make us feminine. They are gifts of our femininity, and we express them in different ways.
Yeah, and it's not about the exterior, external trappings so much of feeling feminine or feeling like a girl or anything like that, or performing like a girl. It's more about the landscape of your soul. And that's the interior life that the enemy tries to keep us from. Well, let's not think about that. Let's just distract ourselves in a thousand ways so that we don't have to think about these things inside of us. Because if we don't think about them, maybe we won't use them. Or maybe we'll find a way to distract ourselves away from them. You know, like, it's all the noise, you know, that C.S. Lewis talks about in Screwtape Letters. Just keep piling on the noise so that they'll never realize who they are.
My husband and I were just talking about Screwtape Letters. He listened to like half of it, and I read about half of it, and I couldn't get through it because it just
freaks easier to
me
read
too. Out.
Because it's
much
true.
To listen
it's
to.
Scary.
So like, it's scary how true it is.
Oh,
yeah, like
crazy.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you think about, I've had those thoughts.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's for a Protestant, he really got. No, I'm just playing. I would have loved to have claimed him, but I think that he stayed where he was so that everyone could benefit from him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we could all enjoy his theological prowess.
It was awesome.
While Annie had mentioned earlier that some of these sound very stereotypical because stereotypes are based sometimes on bits of truth and things like that, the church does not put women in a box.
No,
not
definitely not.
And so while we've said a couple times, while these things are certain gifts that women tend to exhibit, you can exhibit these things in lots of different ways. And it's still beautiful, and you're still working within God's plan. And so don't compare yourself to how somebody else is expressing their femininity. Trust that God will lead you in your way.
Yeah, I mean, the Catholic Church isn't saying, you know, well, there's just a bunch of breeders. You know, women should just get married, have lots of little baby Catholics. That's just what you have to do when you're Catholic. No, you don't. No, you don't. The church says, okay, so you're not interested in having a family? Let's talk about that. Let's look at your charism. Let's look at your giftings. What are your dreams? What do you want to do? Mm-hmm. You know, I think we need to remind everyone that, like, being Catholic is the freest, like, when it comes to being a woman. If you do not want to have a family, that's probably for a reason. And maybe the Lord is calling you to something else, you know? So, and only within the framework of we sit down at the table with the Holy Spirit, and he says, this is who you are. I made you. You'll find who you are.
And as always, thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Join us again in 2 weeks. Until then, may God bless you, and may Mary accompany you. Coffee and Catholics is a proud partner of the Smart Catholics Podcast Network. Find new shows to love, meet like-minded Catholics, and join the community at smartcatholics.com.